This is Fed Up, the podcast by Falcon Nutrition, and I'm your host, Jason Falcon. This podcast will feature coaches, current and former clients, industry colleagues and peers, as well as a handful of others that we feel will bring value to your life as you continue on your nutrition journey. Enjoy, thank you for listening, and let's have some fun. All right, cool. Part two in store. So Samaj is back. Today we are going to detail sort of what we set out to talk about last time before we just started talking. Like I said, I think it turned out super cool because it was us just talking without like necessarily hard subject matter to launch into all officially. So part two now, we're going to get into a deficit that Samaj, you know, a dieting down phase that Samaj is coming out of. And like I said, the whole time that he was doing it, I thought, man, this is the stuff. Like when people can see a guy that helps, you know, a professional that helps other people do this, we're not so different than normal people. We are normal people. This is just what we do. So I thought it would be so cool to get him on to kind of chronicle some of this stuff. So anyway, welcome back, Samaj, a couple days later.
Dude, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. No, these are fun. I guess like a short synopsis, coming out of a diet phase, when did you start that phase? When did you move into a deficit?
Yeah. So, I mean, the actual diet itself was 14 weeks, started at the end of July 27th, I think it was.
Okay. So July to pretty much last week, right?
Pretty much last week. Yep.
Okay.
So October, what, like, I guess right at the end of, yeah, we're right at the end of October. So about the like 15th, 16th, somewhere around there.
All right, cool. So for background and to actually like paint the picture well, what are your stats as of today?
So right now, just for full transparency, I'm practicing a peak week. So the last couple of days have been very high carb. Today's like my low day in that week. And for those who aren't aware, like, there's peak weeks kind of happen in a couple of ways. For sport, it's for your strength, it's for your fitness. So trying to get your fitness, raise your fitness very high, but also keep your fatigue really low. And then for aesthetics, peak weeks are looks. So how can you fill out the muscles as much as you can while making sure that you're holding on to as little water as possible? The little water as possible part is kind of true for both. And because of like a previous competition history and strongman and something that I'm looking to do next year, I'm like, I might as well test it out. So as of this morning, I'm 179. And at the lowest point of my diet, I got to my lowest weight being 173 and my average for that week being 175.
So average 175, so up about 4, but definitely more carbs in them. And you're coming off a high day yesterday. Is that what you said?
Coming off a high, yeah, 800 grams of carbs yesterday. Ooh,
that sounds glorious.
you know what? It's not. It's not all chore. It's cracked up to be.
And that's an interesting component that we'll probably start to get into. Okay, so that was kind of like the very, very zoomed in cliffs. So background to start. Something I didn't know about you is that you have been quite a bit heavier. Asking you to give us your background is sort of a loaded request, but the best you can, how would you describe your physical background, kind of where you've been before, leading up to now?
Totally. I mean, like, if we go back, I didn't grow up in shape. Like, I didn't have a family that we were all fit, you know, family in sports or anything like that. I didn't play sports as a kid. I didn't start in sports till high school. And so like, I grew up fairly like chubby, fairly overweight, very self-conscious. So, I mean, I'm sure no one here can relate. And when I got into college, I actually really got into the fitness side of things, and my degrees in exercise science went like full tilt in that way of things, and started competing in strongman when I graduated. I probably sat around 200-ish for most of my life. For most of my adult life, at least. And then when I started competing, I was around very large human beings, and the goal of getting smaller wasn't really a thing anymore. So I ended up, my heaviest while I was competing was around 260. And like that was an interesting time. It was fun.
Yeah. Well, no one watches the lightweights, right? No one's there to see the lightweights. You get, if you're not over 200, don't waste our time.
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna actually do work, it's like, oh, you're massing, like you're putting on size, just trying to put weight on the bar.
Were you aiming to gain body weight, or do you think that was a product of who you surrounded yourself with? Not really like the aesthetic focus, just pound for pound, raw strength, ability to recover, all that stuff. Did it just sort of happen more organically, or were you trying to mass up?
I generally had a coach at the time, so I very little was worried about aesthetic goals. Didn't really have those. It was mainly about trying to do well in the sport and also staying healthy, obviously. So I wasn't like walking around at like, you know, 260 eating eclairs all day long. Like it was like lean ground beef, it was white rice, it was veggies, which makes massing up quite a bit harder when you're actually eating like, you know, quality food on top of it. But yeah, I feel like I carried it decently well.
Yeah. Well, if I mean, food quality, I can't imagine how full you were some days. So Samaj, we're about the same height. I'll call myself 5'10 and a half. I'll round you back down to 5'11. So I'll say we're pretty much the same, but really 5'11, 5'11 and a half. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
All right. So just to give a picture of weighing 200 ish on average, most of his life as big as 260 when competing, but kind of got there methodically, like training, training hard, eating with purpose, eating high quality foods with purpose to fill out those numbers. How long did you compete? Like, when was the last time you competed?
Probably around 2017 was the last competition. So some time ago.
What was do you remember where your weight was like as of that last competition? Were you in that 260 range?
Oh, that was the height. Yeah. So I got to 260 and then I had gotten engaged maybe a couple years later. And right before I was looking into another competition, I decided that I was going to focus on a wedding instead.
Yeah.
Cause it was a little more work and stress than I wanted to deal with.
Yeah.
Trying to manage and juggle all those things.
It's a lot. And then that chapter of your life, like without trying to close it, it sort of just closed as life got busier, or
it less closed and more, because I mean, I was coaching too. And I think on the coaching side of things, it's hard to treat yourself as a coach and an athlete. So I was leaning more into the coaching side of things. I wasn't necessarily, I didn't necessarily have the time to commit to like fostering or developing like a really meaningful relationship with my wife, my girlfriend at the time, working with these athletes, and then also trying to put a lot of effort into myself.
Yeah.
So I just kind of let the training side of things kind of end up on the back burner. It was still happening. I was still training pretty well. I had held on to the weight like at that time too, just with my training. I just wasn't competing.
Yeah. Most people arrive there where you start to pull back on something by way of that thing that you were going hard at, creating a deficit somewhere, whether it's your relationship or not getting back to client, you know, business going down. So kudos for sort of recognizing this may be how it goes. Something should take a back seat for now. It doesn't mean it's going to fall off the radar, but maybe just a couple notches down on the priority list. I definitely had to do that with when I was running a ton and lifting a ton and trying to be a dad of two a ton and a husband a ton. You know, like there's only 100% of you when you start splitting things into that deficit, you get
very true.
Pull back. So getting there kind of ahead of it is awesome. So that was 2017, still right around that 260 mark. Where would you consider 2017 to now, like 6 years later, with no real dieting efforts, just sort of like you living, where was your sweet spot weight wise? Or like, where would you say it's been?
Yeah. I mean, my sweet spot's probably been like between then and now. I ended up getting fairly low prior to getting married. Again, didn't have any real aspirations to compete. So it was like, well, why carry all of this weight? And a lot of it kind of comes off when you're not eating endlessly, right? it's just like eating's a job when you get up to a weight very much outside of your, like intentionally outside of your like set point of where your body wants to be. So a lot of it fell off. I probably ended up around 220 and I got down to maybe like the 190 to 200 was where I kind of settled for a handful of years. between then and now.
Cool. I mean, that's pretty dang good. What is that, like a little over 20% change, essentially? Like, that's killer. And it's interesting you say that, because look at, like, it's always amazing to me how, like, within football, like linemen, they get paid a lot of money. And it's sort of like the Eddie Hall documentary where he was flirting with retiring. And he said some days he almost felt selfish for spending so much on groceries. Mm-hmm. And like, he was looking forward to retiring to be able to just pull back from that, not be eating all the time, not spending all his family's money. And so he, you know, was looking forward to being able to drop weight.
Mm-hmm.
You see NFL players retire and do it. Set point, like you said, maintaining a weight well above your body's where it would otherwise be, is very hard. It's very expensive. So
yeah, intentionally, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So getting down, dude, all of it. And that was then grocery prices. Imagine now grocery prices.
I won't even try.
No. Yeah. It's an expensive world out there. So 195-ish, 200. What should we go into next? How are you eating? Like, as you were coming down and just kind of focusing on newly married, growing the business, still training, not really eating with the same intent, not competing. Like, what did a day in the life or a week in the life of what was your approach to food through that?
Yeah, I mean, approach, there was probably some general structure at the time, trying to generally eat meals versus like snacking on a bunch of things all day long. But there were absolutely times where, like, based on where we were, it was just easier to grab a box of Cheez-Its or whatever. But the funny thing is, again, like, when you're eating for 260, that was 6,000 calories. A box of Cheez-Its wasn't going to crush me, you know? So snacking probably led me to eating less at that particular time in my life.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I don't think, work long term, because at some point you can't maintain a really great physique like not managing your nutrition really well. But just because I wasn't eating that quantity of food, I mean, you can probably lackadaisically move your way through 3,000 calories, but not six.
Yeah.
Generally, there's a little bit more intention that goes there. But for the most part, like, I mean, I have a background in PN. Precision nutrition, like, I was working with clients. So lean protein, generally complex carbs, vegetables. I like cooking, so I was always looking up recipes and trying new things. I'm Jamaican, so a lot of Jamaican food. I love Indian food. My wife and I traveled to Thailand on a few bases, so I love trying to create some of the dishes that we found in Thailand. I love trying to figure out, like, what are these things that I enjoy about, you know, venturing into the world, restaurants that I like to go to, how can I recreate them at home? So that those years were probably a lot of that. Like, I'm a wine and dining my wife type of guy. Like, let me put something like in front of you that makes you smile. And, you know, if I have friends coming over, I want to do the same thing for them. So I prioritize food in that way.
Yeah. I mean, well, and that's awesome. So you kind of like enjoyed life and also just so happened to, I don't even want to say cut intake by 50% because you didn't do it intentionally. It's just sort of how the math worked out. And so that got you, you know, 195 to 200. So living like that, and then fast forward to July of this year.
Yeah.
Time to diet, really just for the sole sake of dieting. No real, it wasn't for this competition or this stage. Just to learn a little bit more about yourself now. How did you decide to approach, like, what were going to be, I guess, what was the strategy? What was the diet strategy this time?
Yeah. So, I mean, I naturally hold on to some more body fat than I'd like. It's just kind of, you know, when we look at my whole family, genetics plays, I think, a really big role in that. So if I, like, not being intentional with my diet, I wasn't in bad shape by any means, but also there were some things that I would love to improve. Like, I could be leaner. I could eat a little better. I could try to make some better choices in these certain categories. I could be a bit more intentional, both short term and long term. And I think this time around was a bit different, because in the past I've always dieted for the for the idea of like, I want to do something. I'm going to do a sport. I have an event. I mean, okay, my wedding's coming up. Wanna look great for my wedding photos. Maybe we had a vacation coming up and okay, cool. I know how to do these things. So I might as well utilize these strategies to be good on vacation. Or granted, competitions weren't really a thing, like, but if like, you know, something comes up, like I want to be kind of ready and in shape to do that. Yeah. And like I said, I wasn't ever really that far off in my mind at least, but I guess because of that, there wasn't really a fire under me to like actually push my body in a way that got the best result,
right,
that I could see. Yeah. So this time around, I didn't necessarily want to just put this goal at the end. And the goal for me, at least like how I created it and how I framed it, was to follow a journey similar to how I'd want a client to follow a journey. How do you actually, you know, in the fitness space, we talk about making long-term change and making sustainable change, but oftentimes we don't make sustainable changes. Like we ebb and flow.
Yep.
And I think I wanted to, one, talk to clients or talk through clients about like, yes, it is actually an ebb and flow. Yeah. You're probably not going to hit your goal weight and then maintain that forever. The goal is to figure out how you move through like seasons of your life.
Yeah.
The typical one is that in wintertime, you're going to probably gain a few pounds. That's fine. It's cold.
The seasonality is real.
Yeah. Right. It doesn't mean you failed in the winter.
Yep.
And it doesn't necessarily mean you need to go gung-ho in the summer in order to get in really great shape. Just naturally, you're probably going to move a little bit more because the sun is out and you're doing more activities outside. So I wanted to go through a process that actually put people in a position where it was reasonable of how they could go through it, but also like something that created sustainability for the long term. Like how would it look, not just in this diet period, but after this? Yeah. How would you then move into the next season, and what would that look like and what would be required? Okay. So I found myself like, I mean, I was probably in a good place. I was fine where I was. I wasn't unhappy. With like what I was doing, with my current behaviors, with my choices, which I think was meaningful because I didn't necessarily put this very hard weight on myself to make this change to improve my life. I was going to come out of this being happier or better, or, you know, I was going to improve these health outcomes, find myself, whatever, you know, whatever really big thing people put on losing 20 pounds or 30 pounds.
It's not a sweat lodge, right? Like it's not a walkabout or a vision.
Right.
It's just sort of a set of principles or strategies.
Yeah.
And there is some other deep work to be done if one needs it, but this is probably not that. Have you had abs before? You have abs right now, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a certain like ab that sprung where your brain was just like happiness?
Right. No.
No. Okay.
No.
It's a very rare, fleeting thing. A lot of people are chasing it, and I try to let them know, like, this, it may not happen, and you may actually be unhappier when you realize that thing you've been forever chasing.
What it actually takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like it just happened, and now it's over. Mm-hmm. Like you ate a cupcake, and now they're gone.
Yeah.
Right. So I wanted to go through this in a way that was. It's a conversation I have with clients where they think that they're going to achieve happiness by getting to some goal, but in reality, the goal is just simply the goal. It doesn't need to have this very large meaning. The only reason why you may want to do it is because you want to.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But then we also probably need to find some deeper things that are going on. Like how do we build this identity of the person that achieves the goal?
Yeah.
Right. It's not about winning the game. It's about like continuing to play. Like, how do you build a person who wants to play,
right,
versus someone who just wins a game?
Yeah.
Because you win and it's over.
Unrelated, but semi-related. What really, really struck me, I knew it was a thing. I didn't realize how much it was a thing. But when, you know, March, April 2020 happened, and we were in that initial just deer in the headlights, shell-shocked phase, but then it became clear this is going to drag on a while, and every race got canceled, and every event got canceled, and every competition canceled. This is not a dig at them at all, because we were all grieving and coping and just had no idea what to think. But how many people that I considered very dedicated lifters and runners and just stop training.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
nothing on the calendar. Why should I keep training?
Mm-hmm.
And that was so strange to me. I'm at the point now, like I was in that season of life before, like I was mm-hmm. doing things because I'm going to the gym today because 3 months from now, this is my competition. Right now, I don't have a single goal in mind. And I mm-hmm. we're in week 12 of probably one of the best, hardest programs that I've run ever. And like, just kind of training to train and enjoying the love of doing the thing, not using the thing as this thing that's going to get me into this actual hard goal. Like I truly hope, I don't know where I'm going with this. I truly hope mm-hmm. everyone can get to a place of like filling their day with things that they're doing for the sake of doing the thing, rather than if I want to get on the stage, I have to put myself through this hellacious process yeah. and I have to train for it. Like,
I actually like that way of thinking. And that's probably the transition point for me where yeah. I wasn't trying to do this with a specific aim in mind. Where I used to tell people, like, if you're going to train this hard, you might as well compete in something.
Yeah.
And I needed to get myself to a place where when someone said, "Hey, Samaj, what are you training for?" And I'm like, "Well, it's Wednesday. It's leg day."
Yeah.
Just training for leg day.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really worried about where leg day takes me from here. I'm just worried about here and now and being more present. And I think that's the work that I'd like to get more people to that I'm working with. It's like, how can you be more present? Because you're so caught up with what's going to happen down the road or what happened yesterday that you make choices that don't align really well with who you currently are and who you'd like to be.
Yeah.
Right. And we can go down this very like esoteric kind of road.
Oh, dude, I have a 20-minute video on YouTube about cognitive dissonance and what it means. And and it's my best interpretation. But dude, 1,000%, we're very driven, right? Like dopamine is very real and we chase mm-hmm. certain things. But I think that for the most part, that needing to chase something makes life really difficult. Like I have mm-hmm. certain clients, I don't know if they'll ever listen to this, but like, we've gamified everything. We've created streaks. Streaks are amazing early for building habits that we want to stay. The streak isn't the goal. The mm-hmm. thing becoming part of our life is a goal. So I've actively encouraged people that I've been working with, like a mile a day is amazing. You moving your body for that length of time regularly is going to only ever improve your physical and mental health. The streak isn't the goal, right? Mm-hmm. Like you doing the thing. So like I encourage them, end it on your terms. You're mm-hmm. going to turn an ankle. You're going to get a blizzard. Something's going to happen to where you can't do it. So end it on your terms. And maybe there is no thing that you're actually chasing. Maybe it's just, okay, this is part of my day now. That 7-day mm-hmm. streak served a purpose. I don't need a 700-day streak. Did you listen to Huberman's? I know he gets extremely granular, but if you listen to about half of it, it's effective. But did you listen to his on dopamine? He's done like 3 or 4 of them on dopamine. Mm. It's very, very thought provoking. I learned a lot about myself with how my running, like I was never ever set out to run ultra marathons. And then I kept doing more and kept going longer with them. He talks about like freshly, like postpartum moms and mm. like that's sort of your identity, right? Like you're a woman and then you're a pregnant woman and now you're a mom and just, he gets into postpartum depression. It's really, really, I'll send it to you afterward, but it's really, really interesting. It explains a lot of this why we're forever chasing and how mm-hmm. it almost feels empty, this pursuit that's not really a pursuit. It's Wednesday. You're doing legs just because it's the day that you do legs and that's mm-hmm. okay.
It's a cool process. Well, I mean, I almost try to empower people to say it's because you want to.
Mm.
Because I said this in the last one, but I said, order what you want, right? Yeah. That's the clip that you pulled. And I think more people just don't do the things that they actually want to do.
Yeah.
They do what they think they're supposed to do.
Right.
Or they do what they should do. Mm. And I mean, there's no suppose, there is no should. There is what you do and what you don't. There is what happens and what didn't happen. And the more we tie emotions to those things, I think like emotions can come from those, but when we almost put emotions in front of those, what is it? The elephant and the rider. Like we make the elephant the thing in charge. Like we make this like emotional, this very large emotional thing, the driver of the situation. And now we think like, if I just push harder and I see three more abs and I sacrifice more, then I'll be better. And it's like, well, maybe just eat a kale salad because you want it.
Yeah.
Not because it's going to, you know, improve your life in some crazy way.
Yeah.
Right. Or because it's, oh, I'm going to eat the donut because I'm not restrictive. It's like, eat the donut because you want it, or don't eat the donut because you don't want it.
Yeah. And I don't know that anyone can just sort of like arrive there. I think that it takes some like hitting other side of the spectrum and bumping into one's rev limiter.
You wander into the woods. You don't wander out.
Generally. Yeah. So what it reminds me of, I made a really long post after January. Like I did dry January, and I talked all about my reasons and how last year was and my relationship with alcohol. So this year I've probably had some, literally like any sort of alcoholic drink, probably like three times over the course of the year.
Same, actually.
Yeah. And it's, man, it's a really worthwhile endeavor, and even more worthwhile depending on one's reasoning. But at the start of it, that pressure, man, the social pressure and the social implications of being the weird one. And I would come up with I got to work out. Like I would always think about an excuse I could give before I was bold enough to be the weird one in these ordering situations. And now if we go out with friends and I'm usually the only one not drinking, when someone inevitably asks me why, my go-to response at this point is my life's just better without it. And they usually don't pry, and I don't feel the need to add anything. That's just like in my soul where I feel I am with it. Like it's not adding anything. It's usually just detracting. I don't go into that, but like if you can get to the place of standing, I just want a kale salad. I just want to go train legs. I just want to, like, don't eat the kale salad because the influencer told you that, you know, 100 days of kale salad, and don't do leg day only if you have a competition, but like do the thing to do the thing and be present in the thing. I'm not sure how one can sort of arrive there, like we said, without probably never doing leg day or doing way too many leg days.
So maybe that's a really great place to like talk about exactly how I went about this particular diet. Cause I think it's very different.
Bring me back in, Samaj. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think it's perfect. I think it's very different than the way I've gone about others. Because in the past I used to just say, cool, awesome. Here are my calories. Here are my macros. Let's start to fill those buckets.
Yeah.
In this one, and I started talking about it at the beginning of the journey. One, I wanted to figure out, well, what's the problem that I want to solve here? Because I'm treating it like it's a solution. So, okay, well, what problem is it solving? It could simply be about like, aesthetically, I'd love to look better. It's like, cool, but I don't think that that's a problem really, or at least like it's not a problem worth solving. When I boiled it down for myself, I said, I don't think I fully understand the struggle that people go through in this process of change. And I don't think I've ever chosen this level of change for myself. And I would like to choose more things for myself. I'm a very indecisive person in general. And one of the things that I've like really set out to do this year is to make more of my own choices. So not going on Google Maps to figure out, well, what's the best 4.5-star plus restaurant that's out there. It's just like, let me just scroll through, see what's around, pass by something. It's like, oh, I won't even look it up. Like that place looks good. We're just going to go inside, check it out, see what's good on the menu. And I think we live in a world where we're constantly looking for validation from other people. We almost become dancing monkeys, whether you're talking about folks in the fitness space, like, or you own a business and you're putting things out there, or you're just a regular person who's trying to go to the gym and get in shape. You're like, well, what am I supposed to do? What should I be doing? How do I look good? Even if you have a coach and you don't even call them if you're struggling. You struggle in silence and you're like, I'm ashamed to come to this person that I pay money to help me. Like that doesn't even make sense. But so I was like, all right, well, let me put myself in the shoes of the client who's going through this process, what are the things that I need to do? And not what are the things that they need to do necessarily, because I think that oftentimes we almost, like, as coaches, we just scale down things often and say, like, just do the smaller steps. And then we don't necessarily scale it up for us, thinking that, okay, we have it all together. It's like, well, what are the roadblocks that I have? What are the blinders that I have on? So I realized, like, early on that I looked at things very binary and black and white. I'm a very all or nothing kind of individual.
Yeah.
Okay, great. How do we not do that?
Yeah.
What are the structures and the habits and the behaviors that I'd like to put into place that create the person that I want to be at the end of this? Someone who fitness is effortless for. And it's not that I don't put effort into it, but it comes naturally to me versus me having to, like, manage all of these various things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Someone who can easily eyeball and set up his nutrition in a way that aligns with his goals. Someone who can clearly understand the struggles that other people are going through after having done it so many times. I think we get blinded to, like, some of the immediate struggles that people might face on the journey. And there are things that I forgot. I was like, I just want to be more aware of what those particular things are. And then, like, actually make choices for myself instead of looking at everything as a restriction. Because I think that that's a mindset that folks go into this with as well. It's like, oh, what do I need to take out? What do I need to, like, remove from my diet? If you look at things as a restriction, everything becomes a restriction.
Yeah.
Like, a diet, eat some fruits. It's like, oh, I can't eat candy. It's like, no one said don't eat candy.
Yeah.
I just said, eat some fruits. Yeah. Right. And so, I went into this one thinking, okay, well, how do I build this structure that creates boundaries, that creates an environment, but doesn't necessarily overly restrict me in the process. I kept it super simple at the beginning. It was, you know, have some structured meals, have the foods that I enjoy, and then start to learn to enjoy some new foods. I think that was simple enough. And it put me in a place where I could now decide, okay, well, what foods make sense for a diet? And trust me, there are foods that make sense for a diet. Like, if someone says, like, okay, eat whatever you want, it's like, well, that makes it really complicated. And if you're trying to organize anything, you're wanting to make the pieces simple and not variable. You're trying to make them very constant in a way. Yep. So we're still looking at complex carbohydrates, lean proteins, maybe adding fats. I'm a big believer that most people are going to get their fats just in the way that they cook. I cook.
Yep.
So I'm not going to sit down and add a bunch of nuts and avocado to all my meals because I cook my meat in oil. I'll eat fattier cuts of meat. I eat things like fatty fish. It's all there. Don't add a bunch of cheese. Like, don't sit down and be like, I'm dieting, let me add diet cheese to my plate.
Fish oil capsules to nail perfect macros at the end of your day. That was not part of your regimen.
Fish oil in my not at all. Yeah. But I think
with what you just described, were you quantifying things to start, or just sort of living by those principles at the start?
Probably for the first week or two, it was just putting things in their place. It was making sure that my fridge was full of the things that I liked. I had tried out a couple recipes that I enjoyed without trying to sit down and figure out how many tablespoons of this particular sauce that I was going to add. I wanted to just find things that I actually wanted to eat for the next 12 weeks. When I was able to do that, I then set a time frame, like, okay, so for 12 weeks, I set at the beginning, I'm going to commit to actually being in a deficit. And I think people do it in the other way. They say, like, I'm going to diet for this long, and then they try to start to fill in the gaps.
Mm.
And I'd rather people actually build a structure that's like, I enjoy the structure, and then give themselves a time frame and then start to scope in on, like, well, can I add in this, or can I swap this out? And that's the approach that I ended up taking. The actual true deficit probably didn't start until 3 weeks in, but I was already down like 5 pounds by that 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I was, all right, well, I'm sitting down, I'm eating 4 meals a day. I'm having vegetables at my meals. I'm full. I'm having protein at those meals, and I'm seeing all of my food. I'm not sitting down and being like, well, let me order something from this restaurant and, like, try to swipe through and figure out what it is in my Fitness Pal.
Yeah.
which is not a problem when it happens, but it probably isn't going to be the like mainstay of a successful diet. You're probably not going to be eating out 3-4 times a week and able to maintain that kind of structure and also a very lean physique, or like make some significant changes in your physique without being overly restrictive in other areas of your life. So I knew that for the next 12 weeks that I didn't have any really big events coming up. I had a couple here and there, which I was going to enjoy. No worries at all in that case. And then probably 3 weeks in, I gave myself some macros. Like this is where I'm going to aim for. I was going to aim for about a gram per pound of protein. I was going to aim for about a gram per pound of carbs and something around 0.3 to 0.4 for fat. And by that time, it was actually very simple to make any adjustments. I wasn't sitting down saying, oh my God, I'm eating double fat, or I'm eating way too little protein. I had my meals already structured. So there were just like minimal adjustments that I was making to the food quantities. And I was also tracking like how much food I was eating throughout this. So one of the things that I think a lot of people end up missing in any diet is making sure that they're maximizing food volume as much as they possibly can. And that's what I mean by they're not, you can't just eat whatever you want and try to be successful.
You're not going to, I mean, you're going to feel like absolute crap. I'm doing a lot of background thinking as you're talking, because you basically have a 3 month and 1 week head start on exactly what I'm doing right now. So I'm like, I started Sunday, and the last few days have been very like, oh, hey, I remember that, like getting back to a lot of these things, because I've not really dieted with purpose in a long time. And so starting to feel some of these things again. And I was talking to Drew on the way to the gym this morning about, at the exact same numbers, man, how did the last 2 days feel totally different just because of my food choices? And I know that I preach it all day long. I help people, you know, more fiber, more green veggies. How about potatoes? They're like literally the number one. And so me making those switches and starting to feel like the client again, there's a lot of things. We talk about a lot of different things. There's a lot of things to remember. I think it's fantastic how you did it, and that it was just getting the pieces in place for the first few weeks before you really even thought about a deficit. The byproduct had already been a little bit of losing by that point, but you started in this really good spot of just getting like the fundamentals in place. And then you started to actually like zoom in, right? It's a great approach.
If you're hungry in the first like block of dieting, you're probably doing it wrong. And I'm not saying like that's everyone. It's not it's not a across the board statement. But I think people tend to immediately go to, again, what can I pull out? And how can I keep in these high calorie things in this deficit that I've now created for myself? I made sure I was full. When you're eating watermelon at the end of a diet, it's like, oh, that's a cool way to not be starving. When you're eating watermelon at the beginning of a diet, you're eating half or a whole watermelon. And you're like, what the heck? I think that's a better approach. I think it's a great approach to want to sit down and be like, I don't think I'm going to finish this. At the beginning of a diet or at the middle of a diet, because you have to eat 3 pounds of berries. And then you're also losing weight at the end of the week. I think it creates a better psychological environment as well when you don't associate weight loss with suffering. So that was one of the things that I really sought out to do. How do I not associate a lot of this stuff that I'm moving towards with this idea of like, I have to suffer through it. I need this to be hard.
This is supposed to suck.
This is supposed to suck. And granted, fat loss isn't easy. No one's saying that, but it's not easy. It's not that it's not easy because you're sitting down and like grinding in the gym and sweating all over the place and not eating for hours a day. It's not easy because change is hard. It's because like you generally go into the box of animal crackers that you keep on the top shelf from your kids, or cheese puffs. And you sit down and snack on those things, and you have to break that chain of habit. It's hard for a lot of other reasons than the actual food itself, than actual deficit itself.
On paper, it's pretty simple. You know what a great year for dieting was? 2020, most of the noise was turned off. People couldn't go out to eat. All the places that would really, really trip people up because of, you know, societal norms and or just their favorite pastimes, they were all closed. So everyone was, we were all living in a vacuum, and people had really, really, really great results. And then the world opened back up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything, you know, the open sign got turned back on to all their favorite places. And so when they were able to make decisions thinking one way, kind of isolated, which sucked. Like, I don't think it was a net positive. Okay, better diet results. It was horrible for most of us collectively. But it really highlighted, like, when people are that much more intentional, when there's that much less noise all around them, I really think that most people know, like, better choices. Like, if you lined up three things, most people would know, like, good, better, best. It's just difficult. So this thing that's really not difficult on paper becomes difficult when we take it out into the real world, which is why I really, really, really liked how much you talked about cooking, preparing foods yourself. It doesn't have to be meal prep and Tupperware, but, like,
no,
get into the habit of looking at things in combinations. And when you go out and someone else makes them for you, you have a much better idea of what they're actually worth.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I found myself making choices earlier on that I'd usually reserve for later in a diet. Not drinking my calories at the beginning of a diet. Okay, great. But I'm not drinking my calories. So what does that mean? Does it mean that I can still fit in eclairs? It does. It does mean I can fit in eclairs, but I'd rather fit in, like, six oranges.
Yeah.
A slice of toast, two eggs.
Yeah.
Like that, like, I feel like that's a better meal personally.
Yeah.
At least, like, more times a week than having an eclair. So for at the beginning of a diet, I've always been the person who's like, well, calories are high, so I can still eat dessert every night. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with eating dessert every night. I think that that's fine if, like, that's what's important to you. But when you're someone who gets hangry, why are you trying to fit in these very, like, low density foods on a regular basis? And again, you've never given yourself an opportunity to feel the same feeling that you feel off of a diet, the feeling of I'm full and I'm satisfied while you're also in pursuit of your goals. Right. So I wanted to start to pair in, like, this feels good. And I'm also seeing progress.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it with clients right now where they're like, I'm not struggling yet. Is that right?
And I'm like, I know it's about to get hard, but I'm enjoying these early days. It's like
I've had legit messages from people. So when do I actually get macros? I'm like, you messaged me right before this saying you hit your goal weight. We haven't gotten macros yet. Let's not worry about getting macros.
Right.
because I'm not in the game of, like, let me just calculate you some macros.
Macros dealer. Yeah.
I'm in the game of behavioral change and like goal achievement when it comes to aesthetics and performance. Like, let's talk about that, because I think that that's why you came to me. You didn't come to me for macros. Google can give you macros.
Yeah.
ChatGPT can do this all for you if you really wanted to do it.
Something that would always make me giggle. What was the year? 15, 16, 17, 18. If you followed any of, like, the big name CrossFit people, when macros were, like, really, really it, like, Camille would post a picture and someone in the comments, or she would usually, like, she would have said something about nutrition. Someone would comment, like, oh my God, you look amazing. What are your macros? And I'd read those comments and go, I guess that's how people think this works. Cause like, those macros for her today, they, you know, a month from now, they probably won't be her macros. And like 6 months from now, 2 years. So like, they definitely don't matter to you. And it's like, how does she live? That's why she looks like that. It's not her macros today. And that's why she looks like that. So I think, I don't know if that was a messaging thing from within our industry. Like, no, really, these will solve all of your problems. The perfect set of macros.
Well, I think we almost talk about it like the macros dictate the food. When I'd rather flip it and say, eat the food.
Yeah.
Because you don't eat numbers.
Right.
Like, how much protein should I eat? Maybe a pound of lean meat a day. Oh, but how much protein's in that? Like, why does it matter? Like, it doesn't matter to you.
Yeah.
Like, it should not matter how much protein is in a pound of lean meat a day if you're getting enough protein in a pound of lean meat a day. But we've, like, made it so that everyone gets very, and I, you know, like, these are the parts where I'm like, I understand why people are like, well, tracking may not be the way to go for everyone. I think tracking's just approached in the incorrect manner, where people think they're eating grams of protein. You're eating powder. You're eating protein powder. That's fine. That's great. Drink your protein shake. Understand that like it's a choice. And whether right. you're doing that or you're eating eggs or eating chicken, you're doing a very similar thing in terms of the number. You cannot tell me that you're eating the same food.
Right.
You cannot tell me that you're having the same experience or you've had the same outcome. Right. A 16-ounce ribeye steak is not the same as 2 to 3 scoops of vanilla whey protein powder.
Right.
Like those are different experiences. Right.
Yep.
So I think we sometimes forget that we are trying to create this change, not based on numbers, but based on like experiences and choices.
Yep.
So again, like going through this diet, I was like, well, what are the things that I'm actually experiencing? What are the choices that I'm actually making? Because the numbers are just something that I use to make sure or to double check I'm moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Not to confirm or like not to dictate like where things go. Because again, what I use to fill those buckets, I think is very important.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's the intake side. Did your movement change at all? Like with, okay, I'm kicking this off now. Did you put any movement goals in place?
Yeah, absolutely. So movement was probably my driving thing. I kept calories fairly consistent. There was only ever two to three drops in the calories that I made. And how I kind of set up my training, it's usually within like a, right now it's a 4-to-1. So I'm training accumulatively for 4 weeks and I do a deload on every fifth week. My diet follows suit. So there was 4 weeks of being in a deficit followed by 1 week of being at maintenance calories.
Ooh, so you did like a Matador approach within ish, if you want to throw a label on it. You probably just did the thing that felt right at the time. And I think a lot of us recognize works really dang well.
It's made a lot of sense for me. And if I'm talking about long-term change, it actually gives my clients practice being at maintenance.
Yep.
And they don't hold on to this again. I need to suffer in order to see progress. I also let them let go of the weight
yeah.
because they like hold on to like, I saw the lowest weight I've ever seen. And they're like, I just should keep going lower. It's like, well, that's dumb.
Yeah.
You're probably going to hit a wall and you'll probably see spikes up. That's totally fine. And to see, like, I mean, over the course of 14 weeks, I lost 26-ish pounds. And I had 2 full deloads where I gained like 7 to 10 pounds in that week.
Yeah.
Like if that's not proof enough for you, like, I mean, why are you trying to run to the end when you're just going to end up hitting a wall? So yeah, every fifth week I'd have a deload, my calories would go up. And it's not like it's my calories go up and I'm eating cookies and cake.
Right.
My calories go up and I'm eating half a watermelon and a pound of strawberries at every meal, which is amazing. I'm actually full. I'm not hungry during that time. And then for my steps, those would also be a regular gradual thing. So I figured I had a couple different levers that I could pull anytime I hit a wall, because I'm going to hit a wall over 14 right. weeks. You are absolutely, it's not about losing weight gradually over 14 weeks. In retrospect, you can say, okay, this was my rate of loss. But the whole idea, like lose 1 to 2 pounds a week, is only on an average over the course of time, not every single week, right? So every time I'd hit a plateau, I said, okay, this is a true plateau in terms of like my progress. I've had 2 weeks where my weight's been pretty stable. I can either increase my steps, drop my calories, or a combination of the two, I guess. And I reserved dropping calories to the end, and steps would go up 1 to 2,000 anytime that happened.
What was your starting step goal?
8,000 was where 8, I started.
Mm-hmm. So 8,000 relative to, if you were not keeping tabs with a sort of same purpose that the 8,000 held for the last 3 months, like what is your daily average? If you just didn't track for a month and then glanced at your watch, where do you think you would average?
So at the time my steps were low because I was working another job where I was sitting at my desk all day long. Yeah. I totally understand desk jobs and people struggling with steps, because I think my step count dropped to 2 one day.
Yeah.
I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, no.
I saw why the average is 4. Like the national average for step count in the day is 4,000 steps. And like, that's makes sense now, now that I see what life can be like. So it was probably around like 4 to 6 right before that point. And yeah, I mean, it was easy to get up to 8 just because it was like a natural kind of progression for me of like balancing work, but also figuring out, you know, getting my dog outside on a regular basis and making getting outside easier. Like not trying to do too much to get from like my desk to walking.
Yeah. And that's it. So that's a huge, for anyone listening, you know, the 4,000 person turning into the 8,000 person is a huge, huge, that's really like that special area of those people usually stand the most change, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you know, you doubled your output.
Yeah. Like, if you're 10, you go to 12, or if you're 12 and you go to 13 or 14, like, absolutely, mm-hmm. still lots and lots of benefits. But when you, like you said, percentage wise change, that is absolutely massive. And a really interesting study that one of us should do when we have about a year to spare and can use ourselves as a case study is just solely devoting, you know, each of these areas, like you said, levers, like only moving step counts, only moving mm-hmm. calories, or however you want to track food. Because that alone, like, I almost wonder how much that probably was like that initial 5 pounds or so before you even moved mm-hmm. into like an intentional deficit. So 8,000, how were you getting that extra, basically like you doubled your step count? What were you doing more of?
Just walking my dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walking the dog. I had 2 loops that I can take her on. One is 1,000. The other one, or I guess there's 3. There's one that's 1,000, one that's 2,000, and one that's 3,000 steps.
Nice. Nice.
And like, once I knew where that was, I didn't really even need to really pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Like even today, I'm like, okay, how do I get 10,000 steps? I take her on 3 30-minute walks.
That's it.
That's it. Like, it can be as simple as like, I'm going to walk in a direction for 15 minutes and then turn around and walk back. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, so I just kind of had those loops in my mind and I said, this is how many of them need to happen in the day. And then I essentially, like, what did happen, and hopefully this is helpful for people who are busy and they're trying to fit this in, I aligned that with work, because I noticed for myself when I'm sitting at this desk and I'd get distracted, which happens to everyone, I'd scroll, I'd pick up my phone and I'd like respond to messages and I'd scroll. And then I'd realize like 15, 20 minutes would pass by and I'm scrolling. I'm like, I could have gone on a walk.
Yep.
And that walk would have actually reset my mind. That walk would have actually put me in a position to say, like, okay, let me get back to work. I could have scrolled on that walk. That would have been totally fine. And I would have, you know, actually gotten in some extra movement in for the day, been a little bit more productive with that, with my time there, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an awesome, you can multitask. You don't, you moving with your phone is better than you not moving at all. So I think mm-hmm. people, you know, fixate on doing the thing perfectly and like, wow, I'm still going to be connected. If you want to progress to the point where you leave your technology behind, cool. But like, start with that starter step, get out the door with your phone. 8,000 to start. How did that mm-hmm. progression look over the course of the 12 weeks?
So at the end of the diet ended up being 14 just because of how my training was set up. Right. Yep. So it's it's 12 weeks of dieting because 4, 4, and 4, but there's 2 deloads in there. So call that what you will. Right. So it went from 12, it went from 8 to 10, in that first block. It went from 10 to 12 in that second block. And it went from, in that third block, it was 14 to 16 is where I ended up.
How did that? So I kind of geek out over walking and steps. And when Dean and I did our entire episode on walking, we mm-hmm. talked about like sweet spots. For me, 13 to 15 feels really, really, really good. It's mm-hmm. obviously me being very intentional, but anytime I push north of 15, like if I hit a 20,000 step day, mm-hmm. My body feels it big time. For some reason, mm-hmm. there's like a threshold that, and each person's range is very different. Like for you, was 14 to 16, was the cost any different than, you know, 10 or 12?
Totally. Yeah. So I had probably 2 weeks where I hit 16 and I was like, this won't last.
Yeah.
And that's when I pulled the whole, like, this is my last calorie drop.
Yep.
Which is why, like, I think that there was three total calorie drops. It was either like stay at 16 and continue on and see results, where certain other things started suffering, or just, you know, pull the last bit of calories and kind of suffer for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And that was probably the hardest part of the diet. Like the last 3 to 4 weeks of the diet was just like, all right, well, we have some systems in place. I pretty much eat the same things every day. I'm not really going to change a whole lot. I have my activities and we have a routine that we're kind of following. But yeah, I think sweet spots based on environment for me.
Yeah.
Because 13 to 14 in a residential area is different from 13 to 14 in a city is different from 13 to 14 in a rural area.
Yeah.
Where when I was, and just kind of going back to some travel, when I was in Thailand specifically, our morning started by walking to the coffee shop, which was about a mile and a half away.
Yeah.
So by noon, we had 8,000 steps. By 3, we had 12,000 steps. By 7, we were at 20,000+ steps for the day. And that was just because we were moving around different areas of a city.
Yep.
Right. When I'm walking loops here, it's like running on a track. Yeah. You don't want someone training for a marathon to go run on a track.
Yeah.
It's like running on a treadmill versus being on a track versus walking around your neighborhood. 20 minutes on the treadmill feels like an hour walking outside.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think it's environment where you start to get kind of stale. Yep. In certain, like, variety is still kind of necessary in that case, where I'll recommend most people, like, if you're trying to get steps in, go walk outside. I'd rather you not walk on a treadmill personally. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having a treadmill in your house and like getting some extra steps in that way. But I think a majority of your steps you might want to actually have as an outside walk, at least earlier on in your day, just so that you're not necessarily building up this fatigue from I've just been doing this thing over and over again.
Yeah.
So here, 16 is a real hard cap for me here.
Yeah.
But in other places, 20 has felt amazing.
Yeah. Really interesting observation. I totally agree. One of the reasons I most look forward to vacations is, you know, a much lower dose of all the things I have to do. Mm-hmm. And usually when we're somewhere else, I love to explore on foot. And so I don't set out the door thinking I'm going to hit X amount of steps today. I want to go see all the things. And so you just are constantly in motion. And then at the end of the day, you go, oh, cool. 22,000 steps. That was a heck of a great day. Mm-hmm. And then you get home and it's like, well, back to the loop. And so I've become like I have a 0.6 mile loop or a 1.2. If I take like the outer ring and add in this other smaller loop, I'm a big fan. When I was running is when I started doing that. And then it's bled over into walking. But like you said, either X amount of steps, if you're tracking your steps, or really the time thing. If 30 minutes works out to 3,000, you know, whatever it translates to, walk in one direction for half that amount of time and then walk back. A loop gets a little old. Even if you switch directions every once in a while, I like the out and backs.
But to one of the things we're talking about, even that, I'd like people to transition away from even looking at the number, right? You get a lot of pushback now in the internet space about like, is 10,000 steps necessary? And I guess with me, I'm like, I don't care. Like movement is necessary. Move often, move a lot. Does it equate to 10,000 for most people if you're moving often? Yeah, probably it's somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Either slightly above or slightly below. But like, if you feel like, I don't know, if you're sitting down and you're like, I didn't get 10,000 today, so I failed. It's like, maybe the number necessarily isn't for you. Something that I'll be testing out during my maintenance period, because I'm curious how far I can push maintenance, is doing a 10,000 step loop in the morning, which I have, which is just like far.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, before nine, can I hit 10,000?
Yeah, dude, like, I was on that run for a while. What does that look like? 10K by 10. And I did it for like 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then life started to intervene, but I'd be very curious.
Yeah. I know that like I have the loop. So it would just be like, cool, do the loop and go about my day, whether I track or not, it doesn't really matter. I still did it. Right.
Yeah.
And like maybe play around with the weight vest with it and see like where maintenance ends up falling when that's like how my day starts.
Yeah. 'Cause
I do think I talked about this in a, in, one of the videos that I did on my Facebook page, where there's this idea of a freedom number when it comes to finances, right? You make this amount of money and you never have to work again a day in your life. I think there's a freedom number when it comes to fitness, where if you are to have a certain amount of muscle mass, you are to have a certain level of strength, and you're to move a certain amount in your day, where food becomes a non-thing that you have to worry about as a calorie ceiling.
Yeah.
Because your body's, you're not going to be able to eat above a certain point, and your body's just going to use it.
So Dean and I got into that, and we disagreed. Based on what I've seen in me, but mostly what I've seen in other people, I believe as step counts go, 15,000 steps is the level at which if one is overweight, it's going to pull the weight off them. Mm-hmm. And then if they're, if it, essentially, no matter who you are, you're probably going to be able to care almost zero about food. And that's going to get you down to a healthy weight range. Dean disagrees and thinks it's a little bit higher, up toward 20. But one, the logistics, like that's a lot of walking. Like you're not going to have time to really get into trouble. As silly as that sounds.
Yeah, it's that, right? Like, yeah. I think we've talked about it. I've talked to Dean about it a couple times where I'm like, the thing about walking is that you don't eat. It's not that the walking does anything specifically for you. It's like while you're walking, you're not carrying around Takis and sitting down like with your weight vest and like, these into this walk today. Like you're probably just filling time with valuable stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
Which is why I think the idea of moving to a position of choice makes people really pay attention to, hey, well, how am I spending my time? What am I choosing to do? Because if you're choosing to just sit around and snack all day long, I see why you're 20 pounds overweight.
Right.
But if you're choosing to do things that are actually meaningful to you, like, don't get me wrong, I'm sure that there's a handful of people that snacking is meaningful to, but it's probably not you who are listening. Yeah. You know, it's not, there's probably something else that you'd like to do with your time and your energy.
Yeah.
And snacking is just the thing that you're doing because you're bored.
It's literally a pastime, right? Yeah. It's this mindless thing.
So when we talk about solving the problem isn't snacking. The problem is that like you are very unclear about the things that are meaningful to you and how you're going to actually go do those things. I want you to actually figure that out.
Yeah.
Because if you figure that out, you'll actually be happy and you would actually lose 20 pounds.
I mean, look at people that go, I always talk about Europe, New York City, Disney World. They're all similar. And I realize Europe is a huge, huge blanket statement, but like people come back, they had the time of their life. They ate their absolute ass off and they come back 3 pounds lighter and their mind is just blown because they're like, oh my God, I assume the worst. It's like you didn't really sit still. You walked everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You were having fun, stress, happiness, those like that has to play in. And like usually their quote is something like, we stayed so busy, I didn't even think about food.
Mm-hmm.
Or like we got the kitchen sink at Disney. And after that, we were just having so much fun. I think I only ate like one other time, but like when we get out of our normal environment where it's just very static. And so we have a lot of time to like get into the same old trouble. We really have to like force change. But when people without realizing it, put themselves in the situation where they're super active, mentally occupied on things that are bringing them joy, it's like the weight just magically falls off. Except it's not magic, it's some combo of all those things, right? All right, so that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening to Fed Up from Falcon Nutrition. We hope you learned a thing or two, or at worst, had a little fun with us. Please make sure you subscribe to stay up to date with our most recent episodes, and make sure you hit us up if we can answer any questions for you. Talk to you next time.